Our next case this morning is number 063708, Guta v. Standard Select Trust Insurance. Mr. Dubofsky.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mark Dubofsky. I represent the plaintiff appellant, Dr. Gandhi Guta. It's regrettable that we're even here today, because during the course of the litigation of this case, the parties reached a settlement that should have been binding upon the parties and upon the court. The parties exchanged emails in which they confirmed a settlement agreement in which both parties would agree to dismiss their respective claim and counterclaim and walk away from the table, neither side receiving anything. That exchange of emails, to the extent that it could have been considered inconclusive at that time, was rendered conclusive objectively by the fact that the defendant then tendered a settlement agreement. It was that tendering of the settlement agreement that brings this case within the purview of this court's recent decision in Dillard versus Starcon, which said that you look at the party's objective conduct, not their subjective belief.
But the problem that the district court found here was that the tender of the agreement was, in fact, not accepted by Dr. Guta, and the earlier exchange had simply indicated a willingness to negotiate. I mean, these are fact-dependent circumstances. Dillard might be one thing, other cases are other things, but the court finds that there are material points on which the parties, in fact, had not come to an agreement.
Well,
the scope of release is about as material as it can get with a settlement, for example.
With respect to the tendered settlement agreement, the points that were at issue were points that were not discussed in the exchange of emails. The exchange of emails merely contemplated that the parties would walk away from the table.
But the exchange of emails also said we're willing to entertain discussions, and then I would say if Dr. Guta had simply signed as is the form that Standard tendered to it, you're right, we wouldn't be here. But he didn't. It looks to me like they say this is a basis on which we can talk, but it never gets finalized.
Well, this case is remarkably like the district court case that we cited, the Northwestern Mutual versus Stein case, where the type of exchange that had taken place before the parties had a tendered settlement agreement was identical in tone to the exchange that occurred here. And the court found that that exchange constituted a binding walk-away type agreement. And that's exactly what took place here. But even if this court is to affirm that portion of the lower court's ruling, both with respect to the claim that was asserted by Dr. Guta, as well as with respect to the counterclaim, we believe that the court's judgment was in fundamental error. First of all, with respect to the merits of the claim, consistent with this court's ruling in Halpin versus Granger, as well as the second court's ruling in the Demirovic case, it is simply unreasonable to believe and illogical to believe that the plaintiff, who was 62 years old, had no administrative background whatsoever, could suddenly work as a medical director in an administrative position. Imagine if the situation were reversed. Imagine if Dr. Guta had been an administrator for 30 years and the insurance company found that he could work as a surgeon. This court would be extremely skeptical of any insurance company that would reach a conclusion like that. You're talking about essentially an entirely different occupation. The only aspect shared by the two occupations are the fact that the individual is a medical doctor. But the skill set is entirely different. This is somebody who devoted 30 years to the operating room. And the administrative duties that Dr. Guta engaged in were the type of honorary administrative duties that any physician who has hospital privileges would engage in. And if you look at Mr. Smith's reports that are in the record, Mr. Smith refers to Dr. Guta's service on committees that met three times a year, twice a year, four times a year. This is not the day-in, day-out administration that a medical director would be expected to perform.
But he also ran his own practice, of course.
He had a small medical practice, but I think that there's a qualitative difference between running a medical practice and administering whatever a medical director would do.
It depends how big the practice. I mean, you know, you're assuming, you know, you're suddenly the medical director of Northwestern Memorial Faculty Foundation or something. They come in all sizes, and Dr. Gouda himself indicates that he performs these administrative duties as chair of the Department of Surgery, as president of a medical staff, and on and on.
And Mr. Smith analyzed those positions and indicated that they were, in effect, honorary, very short-term type of experiences where somebody meets a couple of times a year. This goes to this court's finding in the O'Reilly case that there has to be a reasonable inquiry. Mr. Smith drew assumptions from what Dr. Gouda had said without ever talking to Dr. Gouda to see what that entailed and whether those skills would be transferable to the position of an administrative director or a medical director.
But you do have to have an MD to be a medical director, right?
That's correct.
And you have to administer, and how much hands-on administration you do, again, probably depends on the size of the operation. I suspect lots of medical directors, for example, to take another one of his points, are not simultaneously the information technology supervisor. Somebody else does the computers.
One would assume as much, but the fact is that Mr. Smith's report is nothing but an ipsy-dixit assertion, whereas Dr. Hunton actually met with Dr. Gouda, interviewed him, found out what his real background was, and compared that to the duties of a medical director and found that he couldn't possibly make that adjustment. And as we cited in our supplemental authority, the Demirovic case, well, first in the Halpin case, this court suggested that Social Security concepts were instructive in ERISA cases. And the Demirovic case specifically suggested it may be reasonable to look at Social Security medical vocational guidelines. Under those guidelines, for somebody of Dr. Gouda's age of 62 when the benefits were terminated, his job would require almost no vocational adjustment in order for it to be appropriately transferable. And there would have to be a huge vocational adjustment. I would just like to make one more point before I reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, and that's with respect to the counterclaim. With respect to the counterclaim, this court ruled in the Hall case that there is a difference between group insurance and franchise insurance. And we cited in our briefs the Unisys case that says that it's a matter of drafting. It would have been easy enough for standard insurance to include franchise insurance as part of the definition of group insurance in the offset provision, just as the Life Insurance Company of North America had done in the Hall case. They didn't do that, and the burden of sloppy drafting should not fall on Dr. Gouda. It should fall on Standard Insurance Company. And secondly, there was no exhaustion that Standard had engaged in prior to that claim being brought against Dr. Gouda. This court has stated a very strong policy in favor of exhaustion in ERISA cases. The absence of exhaustion doomed the case to failure, and as this court has ruled in several decisions in which the court has found an absence of exhaustion, the penalty for failing to exhaust prior to bringing suit is summary judgment in favor of the other party. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Dabosky. We'll hear now from Mr. Bonschlager.
Good morning. My name is Warren von Schleicher, and I represent the defendant, counterplaintiff, Standard Select Trust Insurance Plans. To address briefly the issue of Mr. Smith's vocational assessment and Standard's vocational determination, what counsel downplays is the extent of Dr. Gouda's administrative experience, and it's true. He did specifically identify himself as an administrator on his claim form. And the material that was gathered by Standard reflects his administrative experience, including the fact that he actually served as a medical director, the fact that he participated in numerous executive committees at several...
You mean of his own clinic, medical director there or elsewhere?
No, Judge. He served as a medical director of a hospital.
For how long?
We don't know the extent of the time. It would be for whatever the term would be.
Is that something in lieu of practicing, or is that concurrent with it?
No, Judge. He concurrently ran his own practice and also maintained administrative responsibilities at various hospitals, including acting as president of Loretto Hospital, for which he actually received a salary of $60,000 per year. And that was purely an administrative function. He also served on numerous administrative committees where his responsibility was quality control, establishing standards for quality health care, evaluating third-party reimbursement processing. This is exactly what the responsibilities of a medical director. So the record is quite clear on the extent of Dr. Gouda's administrative experience. And remember, the standard of review is arbitrary and capricious. And this information provides standard with a reasonable basis to reach its determination. With respect to the counterclaim, and the district court granted summary judgment for Standard Select on the basis of Section 502A3. And I would like to correct something that I think was in error in the plaintiff's reply. The plaintiff, in his reply, stated that the plan at issue does not contain a reimbursement provision. And if it didn't, of course, that would take it outside of Cerebov. But the plan does contain a reimbursement provision. It specifically states that plan participants must provide immediate reimbursement of any overpayment. And Dr. Gouda, by participating in this plan, promised to abide by the reimbursement provision.
No, that's not implied like the whatever company this is made the overpayment. It would be from another source that would you would then label as an overpayment.
The overpayment, Your Honor, was created by virtue of receiving disability benefits
from
under the Century Life policy.
Right, but I would just want to make sure that the language in the policy refers to another source as opposed to an overpayment by your company.
It does, Your Honor. It refers to the reimbursement obligation created by a participant's receipt of disability benefits under any group insurance.
No, that Century plan, was there a separate premium for that? Did they pay a premium? Did he pay a premium for that Century insurance?
Did Dr. Gouda pay for that? That's not within the record. I'm sure he did. I'm sure it wasn't free insurance.
Well, I just wonder if it's part of a plan or group plan or something that is withheld. I don't know how it's arranged, but I'm just trying to equate what's going on. It seems that if somebody pays for something and gets it, there could be a way to get a separate benefit in addition to whatever you get.
Well, Dr. Gouda also paid for the provisions of this plan, and this plan.
Yeah, he emphasizes that.
It becomes basically supplemental insurance, so that when Dr. Gouda receives disability benefits from multiple sources, and he received, I believe, well over $130,000 a year in disability benefits from about five or six different sources.
But Mr. Von Schleicher, I wanted to just follow up on that for a minute, because as I understand it, the plan that Standard Select issued, I mean your client basically, was the plan that Dr. Gouda, wearing his hat as the head of his own practice, procured for all of the employees of that practice, himself, other people who were employed by that practice, right?
That's correct.
And so when people decide what they want in a plan, they might have reimbursement provisions or they might not. They might have coverage that lasts for a long time or they might not. But presumably the premiums that the Gouda practice was paying for your company's plan would have been partly a function of the fact that there was a reimbursement provision.
That's correct.
So he, in a sense, was getting some benefit in his, you know, wearing the hat of owner of the clinic.
He received the policy that he chose to purchase.
Right.
And this particular policy provided for reimbursement when you receive disability benefits under another group policy.
So presumably it was cheaper than a policy would have been if there were no reimbursement, just a flat obligation, we're going to pay you if you're
That's disabled. Correct. It's all a matter of contract, and it's all negotiated.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. And without, in fact, it's one of the strong policies of ERISA to enforce the terms of the plan as written. And Dr. Gouda fundamentally seeks to retain a windfall here.
Well, I appreciate those questions because that's exactly right. If you pay for, you get what you pay for, and if you pay for something that allows reimbursement, it would be pretty silly to get another policy, wouldn't it?
It may be that in certain circumstances, and I think this is one, where perhaps Dr. Gouda, it might not have been in his best financial interest to have decided to obtain multiple coverages under other group policies, but he chose to do that. And so I don't think that the cost of that should be borne by standard select trust insurance plans, because the plan is governed by its terms. Dr. Gouda fundamentally is seeking to get a benefit that the plan he purchased from us didn't provide. It may be that his decision to get the coverage from Century Life wasn't a good one or didn't give him a net benefit in this case, but fundamentally...
It's good for your company anyway.
Well, what's good for Standard Select is to have the terms of the plan interpreted as written and enforced as written, and that Dr. Gouda gets, and all the employees who are members of that plan get, what was paid for, and that's reflected in the terms of this plan. I'd like to, with regard to the issue of whether the Century Life policy is group insurance, the policy says group insurance policy. Dr. Gouda received a certificate of insurance and not a standalone policy. So this is group insurance. It says so on the name of the document, and it has all the hallmarks of group insurance.
But it wasn't mandatory, I guess, for the... I mean, all AMA members don't have to have a Century policy, right?
That's true, but there are many group policies. In fact, there's many ERISA plans, which are group policies, if they're insurer-funded, in which participation is not mandatory. So whether participation is mandatory or not mandatory doesn't determine whether it's a group policy or franchise insurance. It's, again, it's a matter of contract. Dr. Gouda argues in his brief, and this wasn't addressed yet by counsel, but the concept of the voluntary payment doctrine, and I wanted to address that briefly because it's important here. Fundamentally, this is a state law doctrine, and as a threshold matter, Standard Select didn't have full knowledge of the facts for purposes of the voluntary payment doctrine because Standard Select didn't have a copy of the Century Life Group policy. So Dr. Gouda argues that Standard Select should have requested it and basically should have investigated further and avoided the mistake.
But, you know, you're in this kind of funny middle position because it's not as though Dr. Gouda didn't tell Standard that he was getting benefits from Century. He says, and I don't understand you to dispute this, that he revealed everybody that he was getting benefits from. And you never then said, well, is any of these a group policy such that we might not need to pay so much?
That's correct,
Your
Honor.
At what point is the burden, at what point has he done enough and now the burden is yours to continue?
Well, again, Your Honor, even if arguably an administrator's investigation could have been more searching, ERISA isn't designed so that the participant gets to keep a windfall because the administrator didn't fully investigate the facts or didn't learn something. Fundamentally, the terms of the plan are enforced as written. And I use this as an example in the brief. If Dr. Gouda had received $1 million instead of $1, he doesn't get to keep $1 million because the administrator should have been more careful. That's not how ERISA is fundamentally conceived. ERISA provides contractual benefits to employees according to the terms of the plan. And the court's judgment enforced the terms of the plan and properly provided Standard Select with reimbursement of its overpayment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. von Schleicher. How much time does Mr. Dabosky have? 2 minutes, sir.
Dr. Gouda did not receive a windfall. Dr. Gouda paid premiums for the coverage through the AMA. He disclosed both AMA and Century on the claim form. Look at page 382 of the record. It was years before Standard raised the first question, and they didn't even raise a question. It was first brought up in the form of a counterclaim, despite ERISA's obligation to exhaust remedies before bringing suit. With respect to the medical director position, if the court takes a look at pages 1030 and 1031 of the record, which is Mr. Smith's vocational report. Mr. Smith outlines Dr. Gouda's vocational background, the committee work that he had served on, and then he identifies the job that he believes that Dr. Gouda could perform of medical director. It says that he's responsible for recommending changes and enhancements to current managed care, disability review guidelines, clinical criteria based on extensive knowledge of healthcare delivery systems, utilization methods, reimbursement methods, treatment protocols. In smaller plans, may report to the chief executive officer. In large network or insured-sponsored plan, this person would report to a corporate or regional chief medical officer. Quite different from what Dr. Gouda performed. And finally, counsel seems to misunderstand the purpose of the ERISA law. The purpose of the ERISA law is to protect the plan participants. The ERISA law begins with that statement. And for the defendant to come before this court and try to pervert the purpose of the ERISA law into protection for Standard, which received ample premiums for the coverage that it provided, is an insult to the ERISA law and an insult to Dr. Gouda. And we respectfully request that this court reverse.
Thank you, Mr. Dvosky. Indeed, thank you to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.